Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psachim Daf Chof Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin in the middle of Daf Chof Vav. You'll notice there is a bracketed section. You can identify where that begins by noting the bracket length indicator that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a vertical dash dotted line indicating the length of the section in brackets. Now, before we actually get into the Gemara, we must point out that we find ourselves in the middle of a discussion, and when that happens, and it happens quite often in the context of a Daf Yomi type shiur, that means that one should be familiar with the information that was learned during the last year, particularly the end of the previous shiur. With that disclaimer having been said, we note the starred comment on the side of the Gemara, which explains why this section is bracketed. We might as well point out that up till now we had been introduced to a machlokes Abaye and Rava on Daf Chof Hey Omid Beis, concerning one's benefiting or receiving pleasure from something that is osur b'hanah under circumstances of either duress or, we'll say, inability to extricate yourself from the situation, and a situation where you could extricate yourself from that. And as far as deriving the benefit or the pleasure, there were also two factors, namely either you had in mind, you had kavana to benefit from the pleasure, from the experience, or that wasn't on your mind. That was eino miskaven. The note that we are going to look at now explains why we have a bracketed section when, after the bracketed section, in fact, we will be returning to the sugya we just mentioned. So in the note on the side, you can say, first of all, we have a topic heading, the nosei, that we should read first. Nosei basograyim in the brackets, koil umare vereach ein bohen mishum ilo. This is a point that was mentioned several times already before. We mentioned it at the end of our previous shiur, which meant that which is audible, koil, like hearing the music of the Beis HaMikdash, mare, seeing things in the Beis HaMikdash, and reach, benefiting from the incense offered in the Beis HaMikdash. When we mentioned Beis HaMikdash, one should bear in mind that that which has been sanctified, that which is part of that which is holy, one is forbidden to initiate or to knowingly seek out personal benefit or personal pleasure from that type of item. And when one does, in fact, do so, for example, one would say rides the back of a of an animal dedicated as a sacrifice, koche kochim. Let's say one uses an ox to plow, an ox that was dedicated as a sacrifice to plow his field. That would be a sin, an avera known as mi'ila, personal benefit from that which was sanctified. So we had mentioned benefiting from the sounds, the music played in the Beis HaMikdash, or we saw gazing upon the aron in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or smelling the incense that's offered in the Beis HaMikdash. And the issue of whether or not that constitutes a me'ila violation will be the subject of our discussion. After the bracket, so we note here by the star, Achrei HaSugrayim, HaGemara Mamshicha Lodun B'machlokes Abaye V'Rava. After the bracketed section, the Gemara will continue its discussion surrounding Abaye and Rava, B'mikre Shel Lo Efshar Miskaven, situations where you can't avoid being in that position where you'll benefit, U'miskaven, but you, even though it's unavoidable, you nevertheless do have intention to benefit. And another scenario where is the efsher means you could extricate yourself. However, you don't. You remain in the situation where you will benefit, velo miskaven, but you don't have intention to benefit from whatever pleasure is being experienced from that which is otherwise forbidden. Betocha sugrayim mofin shnei sugis, within the bracketed section there will appear two topics. Harishon hi kol marav areach im yesh ben milah. The first will be the issue we mentioned earlier, sound or the that which is audible, that which is visual, or that which is perceptible through smell. Do they present a problem of mi'ilah? It may be said that these are somewhat ephemeral or abstract type benefits, as opposed to using an animal that's quite corporeal, quite tangible, and using that as a means of plowing your field. Everyone can see that there is a certain level of difference between these examples. Then, in the course of our Gemara, there will be an internal brackets. We change the style of the brackets to differentiate. You'll see an angular type brackets. That's b'sogram toch sogram. It means brackets within brackets. Yesh sugyas naseis mitzvaso ein bo mishum ila. That is a situation where a mitzvah was done with a particular item, and once the mitzvah was done, so then the whatever remains is not subject, if you derive personal pleasure from it at that point, so it's no longer subject to mi'ilah, to the mi'ilah violation. Now we turn to the Gemara. After having hopefully made it clear that we will be going back to the machlokes Abaye and Rava after the brackets, where you notice a crown shape, so we can now go through the brackets with that awareness ahead of time. Gufa. Gufa represents a quote of that which was mentioned in passing before, and now we focus on it. Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Pasi, Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapora. The following was said in the name of Bar Kapora, Koil Umare Vereach, Ein Bohen Mishum Mi'ila. Receiving listening pleasure from the music of the Beis HaMikdash, which is koil mare, seeing the holy ark, the Aron HaBris that contains the luchos, and reach, benefiting from the incense, the pleasant smell, the fragrance of the ktores in the Beis HaMikdash. If one does receive pleasure, he is not guilty of mi'ilah. And as we said, mi'ilah, as we've explained in the past, if one does find himself in violation of mi'ilah, that requires him to bring a special sacrifice as atonement for that benefit. The Gemara asks, the reyach ein bo mishum mi'ilah, is that really so? That the fragrance doesn't present a mi'ilah problem? The ha tanya, we have the following source. Hamefate mesaktores lislame bo olamosro letzibor. This source is describing the preparation, the making of the ktoros. Ktoros was the incense offered on a daily basis in the Beis HaMikdash. It contained numerous ingredients, and the preparation of it is called mefatim. So this is describing someone who is preparing the ktoros, however not he's preparing not for himself, but he's leslamed is to teach, to instruct how it is prepared, or lemosu letzibor, he's making it for the actual Beis HaMikdash, to give it over to the community, which really means giving it to the Beis HaMikdash. This was a communal offering, potter, so he is not in violation. He hasn't done anything wrong. However, laharuach ba chayav, if he prepares the ktores with the ingredients that the Torah dictates, and he's making it for his own benefit, to benefit from its fragrance, so he is chayav. It's considered a serious offense, serious sin is committed. And here we've dashed on the line. This is the main point for us. Potter means he's exempt from the kores penalty, which is the penalty for one who does so knowingly, or if he does so unknowingly, in the case of making the ktoros for the fragrance, for benefiting from it, and he does so bishogeg, he'd have to bring a sin offering. So here we're saying someone who, he didn't make it, He, however, smelled prepared Ktoras that was prepared for the Beis HaMikdash, and he smelled it. He is exempt from Kores and from the Chatas. Elo Shemo'al. However, he is guilty of Me'ilah, and as a result of that, he'll have to bring what's called an Osham Me'ilos. That's the name of the sin offering for having violated Me'ilah, the deriving of personal benefit from that which has been sanctified. So we see here very simply that Reach is a source of Me'ilah. Therefore, Elo Omar Rav Papa, Koyul Umara Ein Bohem Yishu Me'ilah, Lefish Ein Bohem Mamish, these sounds and that which is visual do not generate a Me'ilah violation, because they have no substance. Sound and sight themselves have no substance. The Reach, when it comes to the smell, the fragrance, Le'achar Shetale Timrosoi, Ein Bo Mishum Ilah, Hayul V'Nasis Mitzvosoi. When we said above that Reach Ein Bo Mishum Ilah, that is true after the fragrance, after the incense has been burnt. Tala Timrosa means literally the smoke rises from it. That means after it has been offered. Why is there no Me'ilah at that point? Because the mitzvah has already been performed. And in your mind's eye, whatever sanctity there had been there, it's been expended. It's been used up, so to speak. It's just a figure of speech in the performance of the mitzvah. So with the completion of the mitzvah, there is no longer any me'ilah. You notice here that we have an angular bracket, and there's a bracket length indicator for this as well on the opposite side, in this case the right-hand side of the Gemara text. This bracketed section goes actually to the end of the entire bracketed section. At this point, we're going to focus, as our Nosei topic heading indicates in the margin, where we've noted Besograyim Tov Sograyim, this is the internal brackets, Kol Hecho Denasis Mitzvaso Ein Bo Mishum Ilah. We're going to work with this idea that when the mitzvah has been performed with the item that otherwise would have been the source of Me'ilah, once the mitzvah has been performed, there is no longer any Me'ilah violation possible with regard to that item. So the Gemara is now going to ask, is that really true? L'meimra, d'chol hecho denasis mitzvaso ein bo mishum me'ilah. Is that really so that where the mitzvah has been performed, there is no longer any me'ilah? Well, we're going to show that's not necessarily the case. Varei trumas hadeshen. Trumas hadeshen is essentially a handful of ashes developed as a result of the burning of sacrifices on the Mizbeach, on the altar in the temple courtyard. After the sacrifices were offered and their respective parts were burnt, the remains of that is obviously ash, and every day a panful of ash was taken. Rashi explains Trumas Hadeshen b'chol yom hayo noitel meloi machto. He would take a panful of ash v'noisna etzal mizbeach, and then he would place that by the side of the mizbeach, actually by the side of the ramp leading up to the mizbeach, v'hi nivlas b'mekoimo, and it would be absorbed miraculously into the ground. Kidechtiv erimas hadeshen b'chulei v'asura b'hanoa molen bo. That ash is forbidden to benefit from, and if one does, he is guilty of me'ilah. Kidechtiv, the pasuk says v'samoi etzal mizbeach, it shall be placed next to the Mizbeach, Alma Tuna Geniza. That shows you it must be put away. Now, if something must be put away, that means you cannot benefit from it. If you cannot benefit from it, that means if you do, there would be Me'ilah. But one second here. The ash, it represents the remains of the korbanos after they have already been offered. So we can say regarding that Naaseis Mitzvah, so the mitzvah has already been performed, namely the burning of the sacrifices, and yet the ash is subject to Me'ilah. So Let's read this again. We stopped a little bit early in our reading. We said v'harei chumas hadeshen. Then we're in the Gemara text. Denases mitzvasa v'yesh ba mishumi ilah. Even though the mitzvah has been done, namely the korbanos have already been offered, have been burnt, there still is mi'ilah dechtiv. The pasuk says v'samoi etzel hamizbech, and you shall place the ash next to the mizbech. Shelo yifazer, don't scatter it. V'samoi shelo yanan. From v'samo we learn you should not derive personal benefit from those ashes. So why is it that on the one hand you say when nasis mitzvos, you said by the Torah, once the smoke is rising, so that represents the end of the mitzvah, the offering up of the incense has been accomplished. Once it starts burning, that is it. The smoke that rises is represents the mitzvah has been done. And you say, in that case, there is no mi'ilah. And here, in the case of the ashes, you say, there is mi'ilah. So the Gemara answers, Mishum dahavu trumas adeshen ubigdei kahuna shnei ksuvim haboyin ke'echad. There are two mitzvahs. One is the trumas adeshen, the panful of ashes that we referred to already. Bigdei kahuna is a reference to the begodim, the four white clothing that a Kohen Gadol wears for the Yom Kippur service in the Beis HaMikdash. They too, after Yom Kippur, according to one school of thought, they must be put away. That's after Yom Kippur, they're buried, they're put away, they're not used ever again. So Trumas HaDeshen and Bigdei Kahuna, which even though the mitzvah of Yom Kippur service on the part of the Kohen Gadol has been done, you cannot use those Bigdei Kahuna anymore, those four white clothing. So you have two examples in the Torah of things, of mitzvos, that even though the mitzvah has been completed, the items remain forbidden for any other use. That those are two ksuvim, two psukim. Ksuvim is a reference to two passages in the Torah. Haboyin ke'echad means they come to teach me the same thing. And there is a rule. The chol shnei ksuvim boyin ke'echad, when you have two points that come to teach me the same thing, ein melamdin. They cannot serve as a precedent for anything else. They can't teach you regarding other things. Now, the logic behind that is that if something was to serve as a precedent, so just say it once and that will be the precedent for everything else. If you're saying something twice, you're in effect saying that this particular rule, in this case, nasitz mitzvos and there still is me'ilah, applies to these two items alone, only to these two things and not to anything else. And that will explain why, in the case of the Ketores, when mishitala timroso, you're allowed to benefit from it. Because it's only in these cases of Bigdei Kahuna and the Trumas HaDeshen that we say, once the mitzvah is done, there still is me'ilah. And now the Gemara gives us the sources for these two points. Trumas HaDeshen HaDamoran, regarding the Trumas HaDeshen, we gave you the source already. Namely, the Pasuk said, V'somoy Eitzel HaMizbeach. And from that we learned that you're not allowed to benefit from it. Bigdei Kahuna, Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, regarding the Yom Kippur service, the completion of the Yom Kippur service, he removes the four white clothing, and it says, V'hinichom Sham. He shall place them there. Melamed Shetunim Geniza. This teaches us that they need to be buried away, put away, indicating you cannot use them for anything else. So we have two examples of Naseis Mitzvoso, and still you cannot have any further benefit from it, indicating that only in those cases would we say such a thing. But in all other cases, when you have the when you've achieved Naseis Mitzvoso, where the mitzvah has already been performed, there is no longer any mi'ilah. The Gemara, though, says we're not finished with the topic. Ha nicha la rabbanon di amri malamei shtun in geniza. This categorizing of Bigdei Kahuna as an example of Naseis Mitzvoso and still having mi'ilah associated with them is assuming that you accept the Rabbonan's explanation that v'nicham sham means you must bury them away. Elo l'Rabbi Doisa de poligolaihu v'omar avaruyin hein l'koyin hedyot. But according to Rabbi Doisa, that disagrees with the Rabbonan regarding the four white clothing of the Yom Kippur Kohen Gadol service. He says that those four articles of clothing are useful for a common Kohen. Kohen had to have a common Kohen, which a common Kohen during the year when he works in the Beis HaMikdash, he wears four clothing. In fact, he wears those four same clothing that the Kohen Gadol wears during Yom Kippur, for the Yom Kippur service. And Rabbi Dosa says, after Yom Kippur, a common Kohen can use those clothing. Umay v'nicham sham, what does the expression v'nicham sham mean according to Rabbi Dosa? Shelo yishtamish ben b'yom ha-kippur macher, that they're simply not to be used for another Yom Kippur. But as far as their continued use, that's okay. So then, my ika lememar. What are you going to say as far as the issue of Naseis Mitzvaso, if you're going to take Big Tekuna out of the discussion, you're going to be left only with Trumas Hadeshen, that would lead me to believe that Naseis Mitzvaso, there still is Mi'ila. If that be the case, how am I going to explain the case of the Ktores? The Gemara says, no problem. Mishum Dahavu Trumas Hadeshen Ve'egla Arufo Shnei Ksuvim Aboyim Ke'echod. Because the case of Trumas Hadeshen, the ash left over from the Korbonos on the Mizbeach, and the case of Eglo Arufa. Eglo Arufa represents a situation where a murder victim was found between two cities. The city to which the body is found to be closer after a measurement is taken, that city brings it a calf, and this is not a sacrifice, but it's a calf that's set aside and brought to the site where the body was found, and the calf's neck is broken. That's Arufa. And once that takes place, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from that animal. So the case of Eglo Arufa represents another example of Naseis Mitzvaso, and the prohibition of benefiting from it, even though the mitzvah has already been completed. So I, once again, do have two examples. Shnei Ksuvim, my boy, in Ke'echad. So the Gemara says, we'll read the phrase again, Mishum Dahavu Trumas Hadeshen Ve'egla Rufo Shnei Ksuvim, my boy, in Ke'echad. V'chol Shnei Ksuvim, my boy, in Ke'echad, Ein Melamden. So I won't learn from them. Those are the only two examples of Naseis and Svaso. Where we would say there still is a prohibition of benefiting from it, as opposed to, let's say, the case of the Ktores, where once Mishitala Timroso, once the smoke rises from it, the mitzvah has been done, you're allowed to benefit and there's no Mi'ila, and that explains the source we saw above that mentioned that there is that the Koil Umara, the Reach, Ein Bohem Mishu Mi'ila. The Gemara continues, all of that which we've said till now fits in, is good, is smooth, is understandable according to the opinion that says that when you have Shnei Ksuvim Aboyim Ke'echad, Ein Melamdin, they cannot serve as a precedent. But according to the other opinion, and there is another opinion, that says, even though you have Shnei Ksuvim, Haboim Ke'echad, they can serve as a precedent, my Ikal Lememar. What are you going to say now? In other words, why will I not learn from them that Naseis Mitzvaso, there still is Mi'ila? And if that be the case, then I'm back to the problem regarding the Ktores. The Gemara says, even so, there is no problem. Because as far as the Shnei Ksuvim that we have here, we've got the Trumas Hadeshen and the Eglo Arufa. The Torah itself has two. In each one, there's a limitation expression telling me that the prohibition of benefiting is limited to them and not to anything else. Trei Mi'uti Ksivi. There are two limitation expressions. Ksiv V'samo. Uksiv ho'arufa. V'samo means, and you shall place it. The ashes from the altar, they are placed away. As opposed to anything else where the mitzvah has been done, there is no benefit restriction. Uksiv ho'arufa. that means its neck is broken and it remains usur to benefit from, but not anything else. Again, once the mitzvah has been done, ein bo mishomilo. As you can see, the bracketed section ends here. This enables us to understand the toshma that follows. The toshma is, we'll see very shortly, they represent questions on that which was discussed before the bracketed section, which in effect was that which we had discussed in our previous, at the end of our previous shiur. So on the side of the Gemara, we have our mivneh, our structural note, and we indicate that these, you can see that these crown shapes will appear as the sugya unfolds in two opposite directions. So with the tip facing upwards, they represent kushyos al abaye. These will be questions on abaye. Makoros will be seeing sources shemashma loy efsher umiskavein oser. That the situation of lo efsher, where you find yourself in a position that you can't get out of, but you have intention to benefit from the forbidden pleasure, that would be usur, that's forbidden. Abaye had said that since it's lo efsher, even though you're miskaven, it would be okay. So let's see the question. Later, you can see the inverted in our mivneh note, the inverted crown shape. That's a kushya al rava. That represents a question. And we refer to this in the singular because as far as that shape is concerned, we will see it only once. In other words, there will be one question raised against Rava's position. Denireh, it's going to appear that Sha'af al-Pi de'efshir, even though you can extricate yourself, me'achar she'enu miskavein, once it is such that you have no intention to benefit from the forbidden pleasure, mutter, then it's okay, and that would be against Rava's approach. But take note of the fact that at the bottom of Daf Chof Hei Omid Beis, we had a chart that covered these different scenarios, and we covered them according to each one of the Lashonos that we had seen, the different versions we've seen in the Gemara earlier. So now the Gemara, Toshma. We have present a source that deals with the Eglo Arufa. We just described the Eglo Arufa, the animal brought to the scene of the murder where the body was found. And it should be pointed out that the Torah says that the animal that you choose, the calf that you choose, is an animal that should not have been used in any other type of work. In other words, it's an animal that you didn't plow your fields with, for example. That's as far as the Torah's requirement. Now, we have a source that says, Hichniso l'revoka. The revoka is a brace that holds four animals together at one time. So you put the Eglo Arufa, the animal designated to be the Eglo Arufa, into a brace. Vidosha, Kshiran, and when it was put into the brace, it ended up threshing grains. In other words, this eglo, this calf, along with some other cows, trampled on grains and did the threshing process. Now, you didn't put the animal, you didn't put the eglo arufa in the brace for that purpose. That's what happened. It happened to thresh grains. Kshera, that does not render the animal unfit, as Rashi says. Shalonis kaveh mekach v'lavavodis. You didn't have intention. When you put it in the brace, you did not have an intention for it to thresh. So the animal is not rendered unfit by virtue of having done malocha, done work. However, b'shvil shetinak v'tidosh psula, if you put it in the brace in order for it to be with an older female that it will nurse from, tinok is it will suckle from, v'tidosh, and thresh, that will render the egla as puzzle for the mitzvah of egla rufa. The Rashi that we will look at together is found at the second to last line. V'im niskaven shetinok v'tidosh. If you put it in the brace with the intention that it will be there for nursing and for threshing, it's unfit. V'ocha lo efsher. This is an example of lo efsher. Shelo, it's lo efsher shelo yachniseno shetinok. It's a calf. It needs to suckle yet. So you have to put it there to be ready, to be available for suckling. Again, v'ocha lo efsher shelo yachniseno shetinok. When you have the intention that it should suckle and thresh, and here you have intention for its threshing, and the threshing represents an activity, an example of work done by the animal, that renders the calf unfit. So we see this in the Gemara. Let's read the second to last line in the Gemara, the Ha-Ha-Ha. This example of Bishvil Shetinok V'Tidosh, Delo Efsher V'Komechavein V'Kotani Psula. And it says it renders the animal unfit. So now this is a kasha on Abaye in the second Lashon. Now, since we learned this extensively in our previous year, we're not going to go over all of this again. However, we can draw your attention to the chart that we have at the bottom of Chof Hei Omid Beis. You notice you have to find the square, the cube in the chart where you have a low Efsher heading, and that you see across the top, low Efsher li bodel, and down the right hand column you see mechaving lehonois. According to Abaye, you see the base diamond. In that square, the base diamond indicates le'abaye, that would be mutter. That situation would be okay. Yet here we see that it's not okay. The eglo was ruined. Even though you're in a low efsher situation, but since you had kavona to benefit from it, it renders it unfit. That is a problem for Abaye. The Gemara answers, shiny hossam, the case of the eglo roof is different. Dichtiv, the pasuk indicates the need for stringency. That says in the pasuk, asher lo ubad ba, mikomakom, the eglo that is fit for the ceremony of eglo rufa must be asher lo ubad ba, something that was not used mikomakom under any circumstances. That even though, in general, a situation like this would not be forbidden, in this case, the Torah goes out of its way to tell me it ruins it. The Gemara asks, Ihachi, if the Torah is so stringent, Reisha Nami, in the Reisha case of this source we read just two lines above, where Hechniso the Rivaka, we said Vidosha, Sherer, it means kosher, well, why? Why not apply asher lo ubad bo? Ubad comes from, you can see the shorish of the word, the root of the word is ovad, is to have done work, but from this grammatical uniqueness, ubad bo, we learn the stringency. So why not go all the way? And even in the ratio, it should be rendered unfit. The Gemara answers, and we are now continuing with the Gemara at the top of Omid Beis. You'll notice we have a long answer marking. The Gemara says, "Ha lo damya elo laha." The topic of eglo arufa is comparable to the topic of poro aduma. Now there are differences, and we're not going to get into that at all. But there is a point of comparison. Now poro aduma is the case, is the mitzvah of the red cow, the red heifer, as it's sometimes referred to. It's an animal that's slaughtered and it's burnt and its ashes are used in the process of purifying someone who was defiled to the dead for metayer from tumas meis. Now the Torah has very strict requirements regarding the pora aduma. The pora aduma must be an animal that's blemish free, and it's also an animal that has not been used for any work. So now regarding the pora aduma, what do we see? We have a Tanaic source. It says regarding the pora aduma, shochan ole oif ksherof, a bird settles on the back of that cow. It doesn't render the cow unfit. Ola aleha zachar psula. If, however, the red heifer was participant in an act of intimacy, of animal husbandry, procreation, so that will render it, the red heifer, the paraduma, unfit. The Gemara asks, well, my time, why? Omar of Papa, Iksiv Ovad, had the Torah written Ovad, the Korinon Ovad, and you would read the word as Ovad, then we would say Ad the Ovid Bo Ihu. Then the only time the animal would be rendered unfit to serve as an Eglo Arufa is if you initiated the activity. Iksiv Ubad, if the word had been written that way, the Korinon Ubad, and we would have read it that way, where the spelling and the reading match, Afilu Memela Nami, even things that happen without your initiating them, the animal would also be rendered unfit. However, Hashto Dichtiv, in reality, the way the Torah spells the word and the way we are to read the word are two different things. Hashto Dichtiv Ovad V'Korinon Ubad Ubad Dumyo De Ovad. When will the animal be rendered unfit? Well, when that which is, we'll say, the uninitiated activity is similar to that which you would have initiated. Ma ovad de nichole, just like when you initiate an activity, it's something you want, that you are desirous of. Af ubad de nichole, so too, in the case of something that's passive, or let's say uninitiated, it would have to be something that you are satisfied with. So let's go over the Rashi and Rashi will explain or tie in this principle of Ubad Dumyo De Ovad in more practical terms. So we look at the Rashi at the top line, Shochan Alof, this is a throwback to the Poraduma. The Poraduma Koi Sheporach Vinoch al gabo, a bird fluttered and landed on the back of a red cow. Afagav dichtiv lo olo olo oil, even though the Torah demands that the red cow is an animal that was not subject to a yoke upon it. The mashma oleo afilu alio be'amo, when it says oleo, it indicates anything, not just a yoke, but anything that would have been on the back of the red cow would have rendered it unfit. The im ishum dechtiv oil, and if you'll ask what the Torah says, a yoke, not just anything, that's not a question. Homar binon bay sharavodos b'maseches sota. In maseches sota, the Gemara discusses this topic and says the word oil is coming to include other types, other actions that would render it unfit. Afilu hachi b'ho aliyok shera. There was, in this case, when the oaf lands, the bird lands on the red cow's back, that does not render the red cow unfit. To lo nichole, it's not something that he sought out, that he is pleased with. V'hu adin, and similarly back to the egla rufo lahichnisa l'revoka v'dosha, where he had put it into the brace. And the animal on its own, together with other animals, happen to thresh grains. Now, we have a star that focuses, that directs you to the Tosfos. Across from here, you see a star, V'yesh Lomar. In the Tosfos, says, Dahasam lo nichole b'dishasa. In the case that we featured in the Reisha of the source before with the Egla Rufa, and it's having threshed, he is not satisfied. It's not something that offers him, that provides him with satisfaction. It says lo nichole b'dishasa shein marviach klum b'dishasa. He doesn't profit from that particular threshing that the calf did, together with the others. De b'lav hochi nidoishatvo, that even without the calf being present there, the grains would have been threshed. So it's an example of lo nichole, and that is the reason for the kashrus, the acceptability being maintained. As far as the other examples we had, Rashi continues, Ol ole al zohar psula, if in the case of the red cow it was engaged in procreation, that will render it unfit, the nicha lei, he is satisfied with that. Fuadin latinak v'tidosh, and back to the case of the egla rufa, similarly where he put it in with the intention of it nursing and threshing, he wants that. That is what renders the animal unfit. The next Rashi points out that the term ubad connotes something that was what's called memela. In other words, it's not something you initiated, it happened on its own. The word ovad indicates something that you initiated. So we saw in our Gemara the reason for the egla rufa being rendered unfit is only in a situation with whatever it had done is something, even though you didn't initiate it, it have to be something you were satisfied with. But as what's important for our sugya is that egla arufa represents something of extraordinary stringency, and as far as Abaye is concerned, all the other cases where you find yourself in a position of low efshar umiskavein, it will be okay. We continue in the Gemara. Again, you see the crown mark with the points facing up. Another kasha on Abaye. The source deals with a lost article that you happen to find, and it will deal with the issue of caring for such an item. Aveda, you found a lost article of clothing. Lo yishtechena lo agabi mitov lo agabi mogud litzor choi. You shall not spread it out on a bed or on a mogud, a hook, if your intention is for your personal benefit. But if it's for the benefit of the article of clothing, for after all you found it, maybe it needs to be aired out to be taken care of, so you're spreading it on the bed or on the hook for its benefit, for the clothing's benefit, that's okay. Nizdamnu lo orchin, if guests come to your house, lo yishtechena lo agabi mita v'lo agabi mogud, do not spread it on the bed or on the hook and where everyone will see it. Bein litzorcho, bein litzorcho. And we dashed underline the main point. Even if it's for the article of clothing's benefit. Now, you need, the halach expects you to take care of it. So this is called lo efshar. You can't get out of this. You've got to take care of it. However, if you're dealing with a case where the guests are present, Nizdam lo orchin, you would be, it will occur to you that this nice article of clothing that you happen to find will impress your guests. You will derive kavod, people will honor you because you have this article of clothing. So the source says that since you have kavona for personal benefit, even though it's a low efshar situation, you can't get out of it, nevertheless, it's forbidden. That's a kasha on Abaye. Abaye had said that when you're in a low efshar umiskavin situation, it's mutter. The Gemara says, this is not a kasha on Abaye. This represents a worse case than Abaye. Shiny hosam, the case of the clothing in front of the guests, is different. The Kali law, you are in effect actively destroying it. Kali means burning it. How is that? Imishum eino bisha, either because of ayin hora. Here you have an example of ayin hora, as is the case in numerous places throughout the Shas, in a purely halachic context. So that when one makes reference to ayin hora, it might not be accurate to relegate it to the realm of the mystical and the occult. When it figures in establishing basic, straightforward legal rulings, as you see right over here. somehow, and we're not going to get into it, but by having the public eyeing the item, they're thinking that it's yours, will bring upon the item destruction. You're not allowed to destroy someone else's article that you happen to find and expect it to take care of. Another reason for the prohibition here is imishum ganvi. The destruction of the clothing is a result of now it being exposed to the public. Thieves become aware of it and will seek it out in theft. So the issue here is not a function of your enjoying or benefiting from something that is not yours that would be usur, but rather the prohibition here is because you're viewed, as Rashi says, me'abdo biyodayim. It's an unbelievable situation that you're considered as actively destroying it by subjecting it to the ayin hara, or the exposure of it to thieves. Amongst the guests that are coming, there might be thieves. As Rashi says, Dilma Orchin Ganvininhu, the Ganvinhu, maybe amongst your guests you have thieves that will steal it. But if the only consideration is the issue of benefiting from something that's prohibited, and you're in a situation that you are low efshir, you can't get out of it, you have to be there, and you're going to then benefit from something that's forbidden, and you can even have intention to benefit from it, that would be okay. Toshma. Now we have the inverted crown, indicating a question posed in the direction of the other opinion, a question on Rava. Rava had been restrictive. Let's see this source. This represents a long question. Mochre, we should point out ahead of time that the general topic of this source is the topic of shatnez, the prohibition of wearing clothing that are made of a mixture of wool and linen. So the source says, Mochre ksus, people who are clothing vendors, mochrin kedarkon, they can market their wares. And the way clothing vendors marketed the clothing was they were called walking stalls, or those they were walking with the clothing upon them. They would wear the clothing that they were trying to sell. Someone who is trying to sell clothing and is wearing them only for that purpose, so he doesn't have kavana to enjoy the article of clothing while he's wearing it. It's simply that's the way you market clothing, by walking around wearing the clothing. He might actually be wearing several layers of that same article of clothing, several coats or several shirts. So the source says, Mochrei ksus mochen kedarkan, ubavad shelo yiskaven b'chamo mitnei achamo v'shomim mitnei achshomim. And the main point, unfortunately, you don't see in the words, but we're talking about clothing that have in them, they have a mixture of wool and linens. We're talking about shatnez. The source continues by telling us that they're allowed to do this provided they don't have intention to benefit from it, namely in the heat, to shade them from the heat, or in the rain, in the cold, to provide them with warmth. V'hatsnuin, tsum's a reference to a type of person or a group of people that were they were pious in their behavior. Pious meaning they would distance themselves from any shred of doubt or suspicion. So that tsnuim mafshilin la'choreim b'makel, they would not wear these kilayim clothing that they were marketing, of course, to the non-Jewish population, but rather they slung the clothing over a pole cast behind them. So now, when you look at clothing merchants, the efshir lemevad kitzum, you have a way out. You don't have to wear the kilayim, the shatnez clothing. You can do like the tzum, the pole approach. And if you don't have intention to benefit from the clothing, benefit from their warmth or their shade. We'll call them clothing-related benefit. If you don't have such intention, it's okay. You don't have to put it on a pole. You can wear it. So you have a situation of efsher v'lo mechavein. Rava said, and if you look back at the chart, under such circumstances of efsher lo mechavein, you will notice that Rava had said in the Aleph Lashon that would be prohibited. And here we see it's allowed. The Gemara says, Tyufta leman demasni lishno kama de Rava. This would appear to be as a repudiation. According to the man demasni is the opinion that taught the first lashon of Rava. That's what we had indicated in the Aleph diamond, and that of course ties into the sugya back on Daf Chaf Hey. That particular approach within Rava had said it would be forbidden. Tiyufta, this is a certain repudiation of that approach. In other words, Rava would have ruled lechumra, and here we have a Tanaic source where we see that you can be lenient. We continue. This is a quote from the Mishnah back on Daf Chof Aleph Amud Aleph. V'lo yasik bo tanur v'kirayim. The Mishnah had taught that when the Zman of Isser sets in on Erev Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan, the hour of Chometz prohibition sets in, so one cannot use Chometz for firing up an oven, tanur and kiram, different types of ovens. Now, when we learned the Mishnah, we were deliberately vague, and here too we are going to be deliberately vague until the Gemara itself spells out the issue or the idea of firing up an oven. What is meant by that? Now, as far as the structure of the Gemara is concerned, we have on the side a Nosei Mivne heading, a topic heading with a structural note. You see a diamond is featured, and we've written the following. Nisyonos, the diamonds that will appear shortly in the Gemara, they represent attempts, liyashev stira, to resolve what would otherwise appear to be a contradiction. Be'inyin tanur chodosh shesiko be'isuri hanoa. A tanur is an oven, and the oven discussed in the Gemara is a clay oven. And in order for a clay oven to be useful, it needs to be fired up. People who have any experience with pottery, they know they've worked with a kiln before. Same thing over here. A clay, being a soft, mud-like substance, has to be fired up in order to harden it and make it useful. When we make reference to a tanur chodosh, we're referring to a newly constructed oven, clay oven. And in this sugya, we're talking about a newly constructed clay oven, and you're going to be using prohibited materials for producing the fire. So what happens if you do? If you violate the halacha and you use forbidden materials in making this new oven, so on one source we will see the expression yutatz, it must be smashed, and another source we'll see yutzan, it is to be cooled off, meaning you'll be allowed to use this oven in the future as far as the heat right now that's been produced, so you wait till it cools off and use it later. When we speak about using an oven, we think about baking bread in the oven. In order to bake bread, you have to provide fuel, wood, etc., for the baking of the bread. The baking of the bread takes place in an oven with fuel. We can say there are two causative factors in the baking of the bread: the oven and the fuel. Once again, we're being a little bit general in what we're saying, simply to set the groundwork for the Gemara and the details that we will see. So, in looking at this sukkah, we're going to be looking at the oven, and later we'll be looking at the baking of bread in an oven. And when we speak about the baking of bread in the oven, we have different factors to keep in mind. Are you using an oven that was made be'isser or made beheter? What is the nature of the wood or the fuel that you're using for firing up the new oven and strengthening it, making it? What is the nature of the fuel that you're using for making the bread? All of these are general factors, and as we go along in the Gemara, we'll see each point dealt with. Tanu Rabbanan. And as we said, the first job of the Gemara is to present Tanaic sources that will appear to be contradictory and attempt to resolve them. So we have a source that says, Tanu Shesiko Beklipe Orla O Bekoshin Shokile Akerem. A tanur, an oven that was fired up with klipe are shells or peels of orla. Orla are fruits during the first 3 years. The fruits are forbidden, and not only the fruits are forbidden, but the klipe orla are also forbidden. So you use that as fuel, or be koshin shell kilei akerem. Kilei akerem is a situation where grains are cultivated in a vineyard. The koshin are the stalks of the grains. So those stalks are also forbidden, even though they're not edible. But the Torah, in discussing kilei akerem, does not use the word achila. It doesn't speak about eating. Therefore, we understand that the realm of kilei akerem will include even that which is not edible, in this case, the kashin. So the kashin are forbidden. A person is then using, we'll say, forbidden fuel. Chadosh yutatz. If you're dealing with a new clay oven and the fuel is being used to strengthen, to make the oven, well, that oven must be smashed. Yashan yutzan. If you're dealing with an oven that was already made under perfectly acceptable circumstances and the forbidden fuel was being fired, was being fueled up, was or fired up for the purpose of baking bread. So, as far as the oven is concerned, don't bake bread right now with the forbidden fuel. And the oven being a perfectly good oven from beforehand, just have the oven cool off so that you don't benefit from the heat for bread baking purposes. We continue. Offa boi esapas. Well, let's say you used the heat from the forbidden fuel. You used the heat for baking bread. Rebbe Oimer hapas asura. The bread is forbidden. Rebbe holds from a concept known as yesh shvach eitzim bapas. Eitzim means wood or the fuel. The improvement rendered by the fuel is considered perceived in the bread. So that makes the bread usur, because the bread came to be through forbidden fuel. It's forbidden. The Chachomim Omrim hapas muteres. The Chachomim hold the bread is muter because ein shvach eitzim bapas. The bread was made of flour and water and yeast, but those are the ingredients that are of concern. The fact that the wood was used to produce the heat that helped the bread get baked, that's not significant enough. Ein shvach eitzim bapas. The Chachomim will also hold regarding the new oven. You don't have to smash it; just have it cool off. Bishlo al gabi gecholim, divrei hakol mutar. If you bake the bread on coals which originally were forbidden wood, but being now that they're coals, they're considered a totally new entity, and therefore the bread is mutter, even according to Rebbe. Let us continue in the Gemara, V'ha Tanya, but do we not have a Tanaic source, another Tanaic source, that says, Bain Chodosh Ubain Yoshan Yutzan? And we've dashed underlined the main point. The new oven, you don't need to smash it. It's enough to have it cool off so that you don't use the heat for baking bread. But it says the new oven that was produced or strengthened through the forbidden fuel, such an oven can be preserved. So if you compare the two sources, in the first source we dashed on the Chodosh Yutatz, and in this source you see Chodosh Yutzan, is that not a contradiction? Loi Kasha, there's no contradiction. The diamonds represent, as we said before, the attempt to resolve these sources. Lo kashya ha Rebbe v'ha Rabbanan. The source that says Yutatz, that's in accordance with Rebbe. We saw Rebbe representing an opinion of stringency. He said with regard to the bread baked in an oven fueled up with forbidden fuel, the bread is forbidden. So we'll assume that the opinion that says Chodosh, the oven itself that was new and fueled up and hardened with the forbidden fuel, must be smashed. That too is according to Rebbe. The Harabonon, the source that says Yutzan, you don't have to smash the oven, the Chodosh that was made with the forbidden fuel, that is in accordance with the Rabbonon that we saw in the case of the bread. They were lenient. The Gemara asks, Amor deshamis le Rebbe mishum de yeshvach etzim bepas. Rebbe's position of stringency was stated possibly only in the context of bread, because in the case of bread, there is this phenomenon of yesh, there is shvach etzim, the improvement of the wood, of the fuel, is said to be perceived in the bread. So, regarding that, Rebbe argues with the Chachomim. However, regarding the oven, what's the problem with regard to an oven that's made with or strengthened with forbidden fuel? You're not going to eat the oven itself. It's not like the bread where you're going to eat the actual bread. You're not going to be eating the oven. What's the problem? What could be the problem? Well, that you'll use the oven that was made with forbidden fuel. You'll use it later on when you want to bake some bread in the future. And when you're baking that bread in the future, you'll use permissible fuel. The bread will be baked through two causative factors. The oven on the one hand, which you can term problematic. On the other hand, you'll be using permissible fuel. That represents a concept known as zeh v'zeh goreim. Zeh v'zeh, this and this, means two causative factors in producing the product, i.e. the bread. When you have two causative factors, one allowed and one forbidden, who says that Rebbe will be strict? We saw strictness on the part of Rebbe, but that's because you were going to be eating the bread itself produced through the forbidden fuel. But with regard to the oven, when you want to focus on a new oven made with forbidden fuel, you're not eating the oven itself. The only issue is, as we said, we're being a bit repetitive, but the only question that really matters is the bread that's baked in the future with permissible fuel. The bread then is not the product of a sole forbidden substance, but rather two substances, the oven on the one hand and the permissible fuel on the other. So would Rebbe be strict under those circumstances as well? Me, Shamis Lay, as the Gemara says, do we hear Rebbe to be strict there, that he would say that I've got to smash the chodosh made with the fired up with the forbidden fuel? Not necessarily so. So when we're looking at the topic of Chodosh, Yutatz, we have to analyze that in terms of this concept, Zevezeh Goreim. So what are we looking for? We're really looking now for two opinions, one that will say Zevezeh Goreim is Mutter, and one that will say Zevezeh Goreim is Osir. The one who says Zevezeh Goreim is Osir will be the opinion that says Chodosh Yutatz. The Gemara continues, Ela lo kashya, we're at the second diamond. Therefore, with all of this analysis in mind, we say really there's no problem between these two sources, Ha Rebbe Eliezer, Ha Rabbonon. The source that says Yutatz, that's in accordance with Rebbe Eliezer. He will be of the opinion that Zev is a Gorim is Osir, and Ha Rabbonon, the Rabbonon will be the opinion that says Zev is a Gorim is Mutter. We might as well point out that the Rabbanan we saw, even where you have one goreim, like the case where the bread was fueled up, was baked with forbidden fuel, there you were eating the actual bread, the Rabbanan were lenient. So all the more so in a case where you've got zeh v'zeh goreim, and you're not eating the oven itself, obviously, they certainly will be mekil there. Let's continue now in the Gemara. Hey, Rabbi Eliezer, this question will now occupy the Gemara, will preoccupy the Gemara for quite a while. We're looking for a statement made by Rabbi Eliezer where we will be able to associate him with the opinion of Zev Zegarim Osir. And we have on the side the triangle under our Mivneh heading, Chipus Acharei Rebbe Elozer Shesover Zev Zegarim is Osir, resulting in Yutatz, the smashing of the new oven. The only problem that that type of oven presents is its use in the future. And its use in the future would be together with permissible fuel. So you have two issues or two causative factors in the production of bread at that future point in time. HaGemara mitzayenes kama yusoydes balocha. The Gemara will make mention of a few different principles, and we made reference to them already in our explanation. One, iye shvachitz and bepas. Do you say that the improvement that wood creates in the baking of the bread is considered a tangible factor? And the second topic is zeh v'zeh goreim. So now the Gemara. We're looking for Rebbe Elezer that will tell us zeh v'zeh goreim is osir. So we continue. Hey, Rebbe Elezer. We have a long marking here. We call this e-lema, but the e-lema lasts till the fourth line from the top of Chof Zayin Omer Aleph. E-lema meaning if you are going to say the following. So when you see this word e-lema, you know it's going to be rejected, and the Gemara will reject it. And that too will take a number of lines. So first we'll create a source where one might have thought it's Rebbe Elezer presented in this source, but we will find it's not going to work. This isn't going to be the Rebbe Elezer we're looking for. The Gemara, though, will later on provide a second source. So which statement of Rebbe Elezer reveals him to hold Zeh v'zeh goreim osir? If you are to think it's Rebbe Elezer and the source dealing with sour, sour is sourdough, it performs the same function as what we call yeast, or what we use today as yeast. Sour is dough that was exceptionally or extensively fermented, and when mixed with other dough, it would cause the second batter to rise. So maybe the Rebbe Elezer Disor is the statement of Rebbe Elezer that we're looking for. Disnan Sor shel chulin v'shel truma shenaflu toch isa, sourdough that is chulin, mundane, and sourdough that's made from truma. Truma is a tithe given to kohanim, and it's permissible only for kohanim, but for the rest of us, truma is forbidden to eat. So here we have a case of a mixture of sourdough, of chulin and truma, that fell into a batter. Shenovlu toch isa, they fell into dough. V'ein bozeh kedei lahachmitz, v'ein bozeh kedei lahachmitz. There isn't enough sourdough of chulin nor of truma on their own to ferment, cause the rising of this batter, either because it's a large batter or because you have too little sourdough of chulin or of truma on its own to cause this batter to rise. V'nitztarfu v'chim tzavar, they joined together, and that represented a sufficient quantity for the rising, for the fermentation or the rising. Rabbi Lezer Omer Acher Acheron Anibo. Rabbi Lezer says, I will judge the situation by basing my ruling on the last one, the second one to fall in. Last, in this case, you have two items, Chulin and Truma. Well, based on the second one to have fallen in, that will establish the acceptability or prohibition of the batter. So if the second one to fall in is chulin, it's okay. If the second one to fall in is truma, it's not okay. But there's going to be a lot more on this topic as we go on. V'chachamim oimrim, bein shenofal iser b'tchila, u'bein shenofal iser lebesof. Whether the iser, the prohibited substance, the sor shel truma, fell in at the beginning, it was the first to fall into the batter, or it was the second to fall into the batter. Li'oilom eino oser, ad she'bo kidei lachmitz. There is no prohibition until you have a situation where there was enough of the forbidden sourdough on its own to cause the rising. The Omar Abaye. Now Abaye will interpret or comment on Rebbe Eliezer, who said Acher Acheron Anibo. Abaye says Lo Shonu Elo Shekinu Vesilikas Iser. That which Rebbe Lozer teaches, Acher Acheron Anibo, I will judge things by virtue of the second one to have fallen in. And if the second one to have fallen in was heter, so the batter will be allowed. That's true, Ella Shekinu Vesilikas Iser. That's provided you rapidly removed beforehand the Iser. In other words, before the forbidden sourdough had any effect, you had removed it, and then the mutter sourdough, the permitted sourdough fell in. So then Abai says Acher Acheron Anibo Avolo Kidem Vasilikas Iser Oser. If he didn't remove the Iser, but it remained there together with the heter, the prohibited and the allowed sourdoughs were there together, and together they caused the rising. The dough is usur alma. What do we see from this? Zev is a gorem usur. We have two causative factors, one allowed and one not allowed. The result is one of prohibition. So we see Rebbe Eliezer following Abaye's interpretation, Rebbe Eliezer holding Sev is a gorem usur. That would then fill the bill for what we were looking for. Where do you see Rebbe Eliezer holding Zev is a gorem usur? And with that information, I would then be able to apply this to the source that said regarding the oven before Chodosh Yutatz. The Gemara rejects this and says, Umimai, who says Umimai, the time with Rebbe Lezer, Ki Abaye, who says that the explanation of Rebbe Lezer is according to Abaye's explanation? Dilma time Rebbe Lezer mishum da acher acheron anibo. Maybe we are to understand Rebbe Lezer in a very literal fashion, that he simply looks at the second one to fall in. Whatever is last, that sets the tone, that establishes. Lo shna kidim vasilikas iser, lo shna lo kidim vasilikas iser, making no difference whether he removed the iser beforehand or did not remove the prohibited sourdough beforehand. Namely, if the mutter one was the second one to fall in, even if he didn't remove the iser dough, the usur dough, they're both there, it's okay. Avol bebas achas, let's say they had fallen in together, hachinami deshori, then according to Rebbe Lezer, it would be okay. In other words, the only case that would be forbidden would be if the heter dough, sourdough, fell in first, and then the forbidden sourdough fell in afterwards. However, if they fell in together, where we don't have the concept of gomroi b'issa, where it was completed through that which is forbidden, so it's okay. So if I had only this source of sa'or with Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, I wouldn't know him to hold zeh v'zeh gorei maser. Ela, Rabbi Eliezer datzi asherah. Rather, it's the comment Rabbi Eliezer made in the context of asherah wood that will reveal to us that he holds zeh v'zeh gorei maser. Now, an asherah is a tree that's worshipped, an idolatrous tree. And being that it's from idols, it's something that is forbidden to benefit from. What's the case? Disnan. And we have a Tanaic source. Rabbi Eliezer will appear in this source. Notal himeno etzim. One took wood from an asherah tree. Asurin beno. The wood is forbidden to benefit from. Hisik bohen esatana. He used that wood for firing up an oven. Chodosh yutatz. Yashan Yutzan, if it's a new oven and it's being formed right now, it's being hardened right now through the forbidden wood, that oven must be smashed. If it's an oven that had been prepared in an acceptable way in the past and now this is being used simply as fuel in anticipation of baking, Yutzan, have it cool off so that you don't benefit from the heat for your current baking. Ofa boy esapas. Asurin bano, if you in fact bake bread using the forbidden fuel, the bread is forbidden to benefit from. Nisarvo ba'achiros, if the forbidden bread gets mixed up with other breads, kulon asurin. We're skipping two words because of the suggestion made by Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosfos. So we read nisarvo ba'achiros, kulon asurin bano. The entire mixture of those breads where you have one forbidden bread mixed with a lot of other heter breads, they're all forbidden to benefit from. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Yolich Hano Liyam HaMelech. Rabbi Lezer says, if you had a mixture of breads, and you know that one bread is forbidden to benefit from, you just can't identify that. So what you do is you take its value in money, and take the cash and throw it into the Dead Sea, and that would be a form of, we'll call, redemption, a form of removing the iser, wherever it is, in the mixture, having that prohibition placed on the money, and the money being destroyed. Omru lo, the Rabbonon who didn't suggest that, they said, kulan asurin bano, they said, ein pidyon avodos, there is no redemption of the prohibition of idolatry. If we just focus on Rabbi Eliezer for the time being, let's say you've got this mixture of breads and you didn't redeem it. So the mixture is usser. The bread, in fact, is usser. Now, what bread are we talking about? We're talking about bread that was baked in an oven. Using forbidden fuel, and as far as Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachomim in this source, their only argument is with regard to the ability to redeem the bread when it's in a mixture. However, as far as all the other points are concerned, Rabbi Eliezer agrees with everything else that was said, including Chodosh Yutatz. Let's focus on that. And you can see with our markings, we dashed underlined Chodosh Yutatz, and we dashed on Rabbi Eliezer, so he will be the, he is what we are. This is a source in which you see Rabbi Eliezer telling us Zeh v'zeh gorei mezaser, because what is the problem with the new oven that was made with the forbidden fuel? The only real problem being that you're not eating the oven, the only problem will be the use of that oven in the future down the road where you're going to fuel it up with heter wood and bake bread in it. So why do you need to smash the oven? Because the bread eventually that's baked using the heter fuel later on is a product of zeh v'zeh goreim. The The Gemara asks, "Ein mor de shamis le belazer bavli dezor de chomiri sura." It could be that Rabbi Lezer's stringency is only in this case where you were using the wood from an asherah. Asherah is idolatry. The realm of avodah zarah is a very stringent, severe, prohibited realm. But regarding other prohibitions in the Torah, including Orla, and you'll ask, well, why are we mentioning Orla? Well, if you go back to the beginning of this sukkah, we saw the tanur that was heated up with the klipe Orla. And the kilei hakerem. Maybe regarding those kind of isurim, Do we know Rabbi Eliezer to hold that Zev Zeh Goreim is Usur? If you have an oven that was fueled and fired up and hardened using Orla material or Kilei Hakerem material, non-idolatrous material, who says that Rabbi Eliezer will be strict in a Zev Zeh Goreim situation? The Gemara says, you might have a point there. However, if you're going to take that approach, then the source back on Chav Vav Amid Beis, in the middle of the Amid, where you saw Chadash Yutatz, you'll have no one to author that source. We'll be left in a lurch. So, being that out of default, we'll have no one to ascribe to that particular source, we're going to say that Rabbi Eliezer, who holds Zev Zeh Goreim is Usur in this case of the Atzi Asher, will hold the same thing there as well. Let's read this in the words. Ela im Kain, if you're going to try to say this state, make this difference, to differentiate between Asher or Avodah Zarah and other Isurim, I'm Aman Tarmei. Aman means on whom are you going to place authorship of that source back on Chav Vav Amid Beis regarding the Chodosh Yutatz oven fueled with the Klipei Orla and Kilei Hakerem. V'oid, and furthermore, Ha Tanya Behedya. We have an explicit Tanaic source that says what we just said. V'chein hoya Reb Lezer Oser b'chol Isurim Shabbat Torah. And thusly, Reb Lezer would hold, like he says, by the Tanur Chodesh fueled with Yatzi Asherah Yutax, he would say that with regard to all other prohibited substances in the Torah. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.